Welcome to the V&A Podcast, bringing you behind the scenes of the Victoria and Albert Museum, the world's greatest museum of art and design. I'm Glenn Adamson, head of research at the V&A. In this episode, we'll be talking about the museum's new gallery on Exhibition Road. If you come to the V&A's main site in South Kensington, you'll see the beginnings of a construction site along the west side of the museum. We're getting ready for a big dig. Our goal is to create a purpose-built underground gallery for temporary exhibitions. There will also be a street-level courtyard, surrounded by parts of the V&A's historic facade, which are presently unseen by the public. This project, which will transform visitors' experience of the V&A, is currently projected to open in 2017. Here to discuss the Exhibition Road Gallery is the architect, Amanda Levitte, of the firm ALA here in London. And we're also joined by Moira Gemmell, Director of Projects, Design, and Estate at the V&A. So Amanda, perhaps you could begin the conversation by telling us what attracted you to this project in the first place. Why were you interested?
Why wouldn't I be interested? I mean, this is probably the most major cultural commission in London of the last 10 years, and for one of the best museums in the world that deals with art and architecture. So I can't really imagine a better commission. And for my practice, it was particularly exciting to win the competition because we've done a cultural project in Lisbon. We're in the process of doing a cultural project in Lisbon. We'd never done a cultural or indeed a public project in our hometown of London. And we're probably more known for things like the Media Centre at Lord's Cricket Ground and Selfridges in Birmingham. So to do a museum project was a great step.
So also to do a project where you would have a big visiting public coming in and seeing the building, having an experience there, kind of fully rounded experience.
Yeah, I mean, the real joy of working on a public project is that engagement, really deep engagement with the public, and that it is accessible to everybody and that you can make a real difference to people's experience and understanding.
So Moira, how did we get to the stage of having Amanda and her firm involved in the project? How does the museum go about commissioning an architect? Architectural firm for a project of this scale?
As with all of our projects, we run international competitions for those that are of this sort of scale. And that's what we did in this instance. But there was an interesting exercise that we undertook just before we ran the major competition, which was to invite a series of architects and give them a brief and ask them to create scale models for this very site and this particular project, and a series of accompanying visuals to support their concepts as an exhibition for the V&D. But it was a really interesting exercise because it helped us understand the possibilities on that site. And it also helped us engage with a lot of people who were finding it difficult to get excited about an underground building. So it was a fantastically useful thing to do. And it showed an incredible breadth of designs and concepts that could be created on that site. And that particular exercise also helped us to further define the brief. And then we went out to competition and, of course, Amanda Levitte Architects won.
So why was it that that decision was made? What was it that allowed Amanda to beat out the competition, which I assume must have been fierce competition?
Oh, it was absolutely fierce, and it attracted huge international interest. And we shortlisted a series of practices from all over the world, and Japan and the States and across Europe and others in London. There were several reasons that ALA's scheme became number one choice unanimously for the panel. I think it was the way that they had taken the brief so seriously. We wanted to achieve several things. One was to create a much better permeability with Exhibition Road, given the recent Dixon Jones scheme that has been applied to the surface of Exhibition Road and makes that side of our building much more populated.
So you have this semi-pedestrianised thoroughfare going right past the west side of the museum, and a lot of it is about opening up to that space.
Exactly right. And the entrances that we have, our existing entrances on Exhibition Road, are very poor quality. It was also a sort of continuation, if you like, of an idea that had been started by Aston Webb. This is the last remaining footprint on our site that we can build. And his initial idea was to create a garden there. And that idea fell apart when they ran out of money back in 1909, and they had to put the boilers on that site, and they had to create this enormous screen, which is a barrier between the V&D and Exhibition Road. So those incredible historic facades were designed, that sit behind the screen, were designed to be seen but have never been seen by the public. And we needed to create a new single unified space for our major exhibitions. And anybody who comes to the V&D's exhibitions, which are brilliant, but they know and they feel that the spaces that they're in are less than satisfactory. Our major exhibitions are split over two or three rooms with corridors running in between. It's confusing for our visitors. Logistically, it's difficult for us to manage. So we wanted to create one single uninterrupted space, purpose-built for our headline exhibitions.
Amanda, that raises a couple of points that I wanted to ask you about. Maybe the first thing is that Moira noted this is indeed an underground building. So can you walk us through some of the aesthetic features of this project? What have you done to, I suppose, exploit the brief that Moira was talking about? What are the kind of creative and artistic decisions that you took?
The brief embodies a real paradox in that the main body of the brief is below ground and therefore invisible. And we took this very abstract notion of making visible the invisible as an idea, as a notion that actually has driven every aspect of our thinking and design and indeed detail. And it's interesting for, you can't always do this, but for a project to be driven by something so abstract, because it becomes a very kind of intellectual line of inquiry. It's not just formalist. And so how do we make a palpable expression of this space deep underground? And one of the ways in which we wanted to do this was to somehow express in this courtyard, which is more than just a courtyard, it's a new public space. It's a very important kind of mediating space between the street and the museum, and very unusual in that respect, that we have the kind of luxury of the space in which to do that. That on the surface of the courtyard, we would find a way of expressing what was below. And the big structural challenge of this project is that we have to span 38 metres. And in order to do that, we came up with a structure that is a folded metal plate, because when you fold something, it adds stiffness. When you fold a piece of paper, it becomes very stiff. And so it's a very efficient way of creating a large span. And then we took this somewhat complex geometry, because we also had to deal with a big level difference between Exhibition Road and the level of the museum. And we took this kind of shifting geometry and then extracted it onto a flat surface, digitized it and mixed it up a little bit to create a pattern for the tiling, which is the surface of the courtyard. And the courtyard will be, in fact, the first porcelain courtyard in the world, with this very complex abstract pattern that reveals, once you understand a little bit more about the project, it reveals the notion of the structure that is supporting the courtyard. And then in the courtyard itself, we carved out an oculus which looks down into the gallery space, so allows a moment of dramatic sunlight or daylight, or can be closed off, into the gallery itself. But we conceptualized it as though it were an empty museum vitrine. So you look into this vitrine, which is in fact revealing the structure, which is this folded plate, but there's nothing in the vitrine. You just see it lined as though it looks like crushed velvet, but is actually anodized aluminium. So you're playing this game, and it's very much following in the tradition of the V&A. It's a very didactic building. Its purpose and its ethos is to be didactic. And so we use the architecture to explain and reveal what we're doing.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about that specifically having to do with the identity of the museum. And I suppose what I was wondering about is the relationship between the new and the old in the project, because you've mentioned this very progressive digital logic that you pursued in developing the design, but then also materials like porcelain, which I suppose our visitors would associate with the deep past and with the collection. So do you feel that you're adding something new to the museum that also speaks to its historic fabric, to its age?
Yes. Well, I mean, I hope that we're speaking both to the past but also to the future. And, you know, the remit of the V&A is to teach about the relationship between arts and craft and manufacturing and making. And what we've done with the courtyard in deliberately choosing a very ancient material, porcelain is one of the most ancient materials, and it is a very important part of the V&A's ceramic collection, is one of the best in the world. But in reimagining the relationship of porcelain to a flat surface, because to take it into something that where we have to marry volume production with a real artisanal approach, it's very much this merging of technology, craftsmanship and artistry. And that's very much what the collection of the V&A is. And it's also an issue of provenance. You know, it's very important where these pieces come from. And we're doing a huge piece of research. And we're looking, working people in Stoke and in Spain and in Holland, all of whom bring very ancient and very historic ways of making tiles. But we're reimagining the process in order to create something very particular for the V&A.
So on the manufacturing side, there's also that balance between tradition and novelty.
Very much so. And that's, you know, it ties deeply into the remit of the V&A as a public place.
And there's a great tradition in the V&A also of expressing the structure, the historic structure. And I think that's one thing that ALA have really picked up on within this project. So there are, you know, beautiful examples of cast and wrought iron roof structures throughout the building. Amanda has already talked about the very innovative folded plate that creates this column-free space, which is so necessary for our exhibitions. And it supports the courtyard above and it creates this amazing-looking ceiling, a very, very modern ceiling for our galleries with fantastic height below, I think at its minimum 0.6 metres, rising to 10 metres in certain areas, but just giving a fantastically interesting ceiling to the space, again in keeping with other V&A interiors.
And that actually, that's a very important point, because, and perhaps something that set us apart from some of our competitors, is that, you know, most museum spaces, most gallery spaces have a flat ceiling, but that is not the tradition of the V&A. The V&A have a fantastic expression of neo-Gothic and neoclassic ceilings, and it's very, very particular to the museum. And we somehow wanted to take that, but to take it forward, to advance it and make it applicable to the 21st century. And so it was about creating a space that has a really particular character, because every space in the V&A is infused with character. Nothing is neutral.
So it alludes to that Victorian past without replicating it in any way.
And we've also talked about light, and I think that was a critical part of the decision to choose ALA because of the very skillful way that daylight is brought into the building, not just into the gallery itself. And I know there'll be lots of dissenters who say we don't need daylight in a gallery for museum exhibitions, but actually we do. It's just a lovely thing. But more than that, there is a light-filled journey down to the gallery, because we know that people don't like, you know, going underground. We need to make the journey as straightforward and exciting and as light-filled as we possibly can. And I think Amanda's scheme really, really works hard to achieve that and shows fantastic views out to other parts of the building. Again, the sgraffito panels on the side of the Henry Cole wing, which have never been seen by the public, will be able to be seen from the staircase that take you down and back up.
Gallery. When you go underground, one of the things that disorientates people most is that you lose sense of where you are in relation to where you've come from. And so part of the weaving of old and new was about creating this route down to the gallery below, because we're going almost 15 metres below ground, and always having places that you can look up and see a view of another part of the gallery, so you have a sense of where you are. And as Maurice says, as you enter the staircase down, the space is filled with natural light. But as you go down the stairs, the light disappears. But we manipulate the light so when you reach the bottom of the staircase, there's this magic moment where natural light is flooding in. You know you're below ground and you can't quite understand where it comes from. But it makes you, it's exhilarating and it makes you feel secure. And so that journey and celebrating the act of descent and ascent was an incredibly important part of the of our kind of philosophy for
the sounds almost like a religious experience.
I hope so.
So what else can visitors expect in the building? We've talked about the gallery and the staircase, but of course there's other features of the building as well.
Well, I think the most important thing is to talk a little bit about the courtyard and the purpose of the courtyard. And from my perspective, it was a very kind of inspiring part of the brief from the V&A to the idea of creating a new space for the public. Because I think one of the very important things for museums in the 21st century is that they go beyond the boundaries of their physical building, whether that's through digital platforms or whether in this case it's through making a space that is a kind of transitional space. It's a way of extending the threshold, extending that moment of decision between entering the museum and not. And the courtyard will have incredible opportunities for installations, art installations, for concerts, for showing films, and really more than anything for appropriation by the public. And in this space, there's a cafe, you can stop and have a coffee, you don't have to go to the museum, you don't have to go to the new gallery space in order to understand it, because you can see these parts of it before you enter. So it's, in that sense, it's a very kind of democratic space that we're creating. And the idea of permeability from the street, from Exhibition Road, was incredibly important to us, because it's allowing the public to drift in. It's almost making the public feel that they have ownership of the space, that it's not an intimidating space. It's something that you will just drift into. And I think it'll have a very particular character in Exhibition Road, which is a wonderful boulevard from, you know, with all the museums and going up to Kensington Gardens. But there are no places of respite. There are no places to stop and reflect. And this will be such a place.
No places to just be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Moira, Amanda's talking about how this building is going to interact with its surroundings. Can you say a little bit more about what the project will do to transform, I suppose, not only the museum, but also South Kensington, this part of London that's around us?
Well, I think Amanda's already touched on that. It will create a much more open relationship with Exhibition Road. Exhibition Road itself is a very busy place. Something like 11 million people visit Exhibition Road, either the museums or the universities there. We, at the moment, have just over 3 million visitors. So there is another 8 million out there that we should be attracting. Not that we could cope with them all, obviously. But the whole point of Future Plan is to make the V&D, continue to make the V&D more physically and intellectually accessible to as many people as we can. So that particular part of the scheme, the modifications that we're making to the Aston Webb screen, will really help with visibility and access. And what we didn't want to do was create a new gallery space for headline exhibitions in such a way where visitors would come to the museum, go to the exhibitions and then leave. And I think the way the design has developed has really helped us to create a new entrance into the museum that very clearly shows visitors options for other parts of the museum to visit, not just straight down to the exhibition galleries.
So we've been talking a lot about the positive impact this project is going to have on the museum and how great it will be. And of course, we can't wait to see it. But of course, it's very difficult. It's going to be a long road getting there. And Moira, perhaps I could start with you and ask, what are the challenges of undertaking a project of this scale on a site that's as precious and important as the Victoria and Albert Museum?
Well, there are many challenges all the way through. I think for designers and architects who haven't worked in museums before, it can be quite a revelation just to find out, right, all the different considerations that need to be taken into account. We've got to design for many different stakeholders. you know, our operational staff who need to use the space, for our visitors so that they enjoy it and feel comfortable in it, for English Heritage because we are, you know, grade one listed, and for our local residents. So there are a lot of stakeholders involved and whose opinions need to be taken on board throughout the process. And during the construction, particularly with this project, dust and noise and vibration are big concerns for us. And we need to be able to offer our visitors who are still coming to the museum, you know, a really fantastic experience while this massive building project is going on. And we need to offer staff quiet places to work. We need to be mindful of adjacent galleries that have fragile collections. The other challenge in this is the length of the project. And quite often our projects run over several years. And that in itself, you know, creates difficulties. You need to keep a core team together. You can lose key personnel, you know, sort of over a period of several years, but you've got to keep the sort of key team together. And that is challenging. And money, of course. We have to raise the money for the project. And then we have to keep everything on budget and make sure that, you know, we don't compromise the end quality. So all of those things really stack up in terms of challenges. But that's what makes it interesting, too.
Amanda, how about from your perspective? Obviously, it's early days for you yet in the project in some sense, but how have you found the experience of working in a museum so far?
Well, the big difference in working with a museum and with a cultural client is that everybody that we deal with has a really deep understanding and passion and respect for design and creativity. And it's, well, you know, we can all have our differences, that underpins everything. And it's made the design process one that is really stimulating in a very genuine way, because the kind of challenges that we get back are ones that we're delighted to deal with and to dissect and discuss. So I think that's the most sort of significant difference of working on a cultural project versus a, let's say, a commercial project, is this kind of depth of engagement with the.
So it's actually the people that you're dealing with,
yes,
on the other side.
Of course. It's always about people, and it's always about relationships. And in terms of the challenges, well, you know, Maura's explained, it's a huge structural challenge. We're underpinning parts of the V&A and its collection while we dig 15 metres down below ground. But it'll be a fantastically exciting building construction site, and one that we hope to reveal to the public and document in a really kind of deep and really considered archival way, because it's too, this moment, this challenge is too precious just to let disappear into the ether.
Absolutely. This will be the only project of its type probably ever at the V&A. It's hugely exciting.
So maybe I could finish by asking you each one last question, maybe beginning with you, Moira. We've been talking about looking ahead to 2017, but if we were to look ahead even further, 50 or 100 years into the future, what do you imagine this building will be like? What do you think history will be saying about us looking back at this moment when we've built it?
Well, I hope, and I hope this for all of our projects, but I think what we must expect and what we must make sure happens with all of the architectural interventions that we make at the V&A, wherever they are, is that the design is the very best of its moment. It's beautifully proportioned, it's beautifully detailed, the structure and the material are very carefully considered, and it's of the moment, but it's very much part of the continuing evolution of the V&A.
Amanda?
I think for me, it marks a real kind of moment and a shift in values, which was kind of embedded in the brief, which is we've moved away from this idea of museum as an icon. And what we're creating at the V&A is a place as icon, if you like. It's just a place, and the structure is below and invisible. It's giving a different I think it's giving a different kind of respect and a different understanding of how important public engagement is. It's not just about being wowed by a structure. It's actually about bringing the public in and setting up a narrative that allows them to become really deeply embedded into the whole idea, the whole notion, so that everything becomes explicit without actually having to say anything.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both very, very much for that discussion and this journey through placemaking that visitors can look forward to on Exhibition Road. I know they'll all be there for opening day. I certainly will. I hope you've enjoyed listening out there to this discussion. Please join us again next time for the V&A podcast, bringing you behind the scenes of the Victoria and Albert Museum, the world's greatest museum of art and design.